are coming to you live from Moscow. It's a beautiful, beautiful sunny day. Almost a little too sunny and a little too hot for my taste, being from Miami. I say bring on winter, although I'm told that I'm going to regret saying that at some point. Stay tuned. I'll let you know. By the way, one of the cool things about Moscow is it's really a place where there is true freedom of expression, generally speaking. Yeah, there is. Seriously, even among comedians. And I'm going to explain what I mean by that. It's coming up during this show. This is the Sanchez effect. What do you say we do this? And hello again, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez. So there's this guy named Georgi Mazurazu. Let me tell you about Georgi Mazurazu. He's a very well-known and respected Ukrainian sports journalist who also happens to be a RADA MP, member of parliament. And he recently attended a government meeting where Volodymyr Zelensky, along with other members of his cabinet, spelled out their plans for the continued war with Russia. Is this cool or what? This guy was there. He knows what they said. So the plan, according to Mazurazu, was this: don't let it come to an end. Keep it going at all costs, even if we have to have other people pay the price for it. That's a direct quote that I just shared with you. Now, this type of direct criticism of Zelensky from inside the government, I mean, that's not something you hear a lot, certainly not publicly in Ukraine. Critics and opposition leaders often disappear or are jailed. But Mazurazu chose to not be deterred. And he's gone public with details of this secret meeting by publishing it on his Telegram page.
At yesterday's closed meeting, Zelensky, like other individuals exempt from military service, made it clear that he intends to fight to the last. But, of course, with others doing the fighting.
So what else did Zelensky reveal during this meeting? According to Mazurazu, Zelensky estimated he needs another $120 billion to keep the war going until 2026. That came from inside this meeting. But he's still unclear, Zelensky is, that is, according to Mazurazu, where at least half of that money is going to come from. They don't have it. So he said at this meeting that he's now going to have to go back abroad, focus once again on trying to hand out, find those funds. Quote, unquote. This revelation is in keeping, by the way, with what Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov has asserted, right? That Zelensky has no interest in negotiating an end to the war and has thwarted President Trump's efforts toward a negotiated solution based on the root causes of the war. By the way, it would seem at this point that Zelensky will maintain that position so long as he's encouraged to do so by many of his European backers. And while there are some signs right now that support may be wavering in places like Paris and London, certainly among the citizens of Europe, citizens, not the elites, the leaders and stuff, it does appear that in general terms, Europe's elite leaders still want the war to continue. Jeffrey Epstein is back in the news. Will he ever go away, right? Man, you've got to listen to this. Here is the most honest politician in the United States. I love this guy. I talked about him yesterday, right, if you watched our show. So this guy, his name is Thomas Massey, is spelling out and doing so in an embarrassing fashion what the U.S. government is not doing when it comes to Epstein. And what he seems to show is that the U.S. government has easily accessible information in its hands right now on the people who joined Epstein in the rape of young girls, but they're withholding it. They've got no interest in releasing it to the American people. Thomas Massey, I mean, he is methodically, not screaming, not yelling, just methodically bringing the goods, right, as they say, as he presents to the FBI director, Kash Patel, seemingly irrefutable facts. Now, you should remember, Patel is on the record saying that there's no credible information that Epstein trafficked his victims to anyone else. Yeah, he only did it himself. Right. Here's Massey, though, reading a list to Patel, a list to him of the people in an actual FBI document who Epstein is suspected of trafficking his young women or victims to.
Also includes at least 19 other individuals, one Hollywood producer worth a few hundred million dollars, one royal prince, one high-profile individual in the music industry, one very prominent banker, one high-profile government official, one high-profile former politician, one owner of a car company in Italy, one rock star, one magician, at least six billionaires, including a billionaire from Canada. We know these people exist in the FBI files, the files that you control. I don't know exactly who they are, but the FBI does. Have you launched any investigations into any of these people, and have you seen these 302 documents?
Sir, I have asked my FBI agents to review the entirety of the Epstein files and bring forth any credible information, and we're working with Congress not only to divulge that information and produce it to you, but any investigations that arise from any credible investigation will be brought. There have been no new materials brought to me launching a new indictment.
If nothing else, I want to know, what's with the magician? By the way, there's more that Mr. Patel just goes on to say, well, I'm waiting for somebody else to bring me the information. Since when does a leader wait for other people to bring you information, right? Like the fact that Ehud Barak had 36 meetings with Jeffrey Epstein. That's more than the magician probably had. And who's Ehud Barak? Oh, gee, what a coincidence, right? Former prime minister of Israel, head of the military intelligence for Israel. So what's all that about? I want to know. Don't you want to know? And why isn't there an open investigation on that? The fact is, Patel's arguments just don't add up. And they amount to what sounds like a series of excuses. It seems obvious. I mean, even to anybody who looks at this. It also seems intended on being able to say, oh, I can't, or I haven't been able to get that information, when in fact it appears they simply aren't looking or don't want to see the information. Here's an example of what I'm talking about.
You also said somewhere in the hearing and here today that the problem is that the case files are constrained by limited search warrants from 2006 to 2007 and that the non-prosecution agreement hamstrung future investigations. Those constraints only apply to Southern District of Florida. They do not apply to Southern District of New York, the location of the 2019 sex trafficking indictment, which produced many things, including a series of FD 302 documents. According to victims who cooperated with the FBI in that investigation, these documents in FBI possession, your possession, detail at least 20 men, including Mr. Jess Staley, CEO of Barclays Bank, who Jeffrey Epstein trafficked victims to, victims including minors, such as Virginia Roberts Euphrie. May she rest in peace.
So you see what he's doing there? He's almost, the FBI seems to be looking for reasons to not look at the evidence. And if they have looked at the evidence, so they can be able to say, well, we're just, sorry, we're some complicated maneuvering got allowed, we're not able to release that. Come on. The idea that the FBI is somehow not allowed to look at evidence seems as bogus as the deals that the government made previously during the Obama and Biden administrations with Epstein himself. I mean, ask yourself, if that were you, not Epstein, or me, you think the FBI would be saying, oh, sorry, we're not allowed to look at that information of a guy who possibly had sex with, you know, something like 40 underage girls. Can't look at that information. We're just going to have to let it go. Because it's against the rules. Come on. Who are you kidding? Look, the more Americans listen to the excuses and the supposed reasons for how Epstein died and why nobody else has been charged or even investigated, despite what appears like a mountain of evidence, allegations, testimony from the young victims themselves, pleading with investigators and government officials to reveal the truth, the more this looks like a cover-up. You know, there's a very famous expression in America. Seems to fit this cover-up, or this, what looks like a cover-up, goes like this. If it walks like a duck, if it quacks like a duck, you know what it is? It's a duck. And then there's Charlie Kirk. America's going absolutely nutso over the murder of Charlie Kirk. The left is blaming the right. The right is blaming the left. The people are more divided than ever in America these days, which is exactly where I think many elites, the bankers, the billionaires, the neocons, want us. That's where they want Americans to be, so they can steal and cheat and start wars and hope that nobody notices because they're too busy over there fighting amongst themselves. The latest that happened occurred last night. Comedian Jimmy Kimmel, who's a lefty, told a joke and expressed his opinion. He's been taken off the air because of the joke, indefinitely. Here's what got him fired, I guess. Here's the joke.
We hit some new lows over the weekend with the MAGA gang desperately trying to characterize this kid who murdered Charlie Kirk as anything other than one of them and doing everything they can to score political points from it. In between the finger pointing, there was grieving. On Friday, the White House flew the flags at half staff, which got some criticism. But on a human level, you can see how hard the president is taking this.
My condolences on the loss of your friend Charlie Kirk. May I ask, sir, personally, how are you holding up over the last day and a half, sir?
I think very good. And by the way, right there, you see all the trucks? They just started construction of the new ballroom for the White House, which is something they've been trying to get, as you know, for about 150 years. And it's going to be a beauty.
Yes. He's at the fourth stage of grief, construction. Demolition. Construction. This is not how an adult grieves the murder of someone he called a friend. This is how a four-year-old mourns a goldfish, okay?
So, do I agree with the joke, the tone of the joke? Do I have to? Do you agree? Does it matter to you? Was it funny? Was it not funny? Was it in bad taste? Those are all great questions. Great questions. And they're the type of questions that Americans should ask themselves individually and decide for themselves. By the way, the guy's a comedian. He tells jokes, good jokes, bad jokes, funny jokes, not so funny jokes. He has a right to tell a joke. He has a right to even tell bad jokes. That's his friggin' job, right? By the way, I am no fan of Jimmy Kimmel. Look up my comments in the past. I'm sure they're on the Googles or YouTube or whatever the hell, right? I don't like the guy. Haven't liked him in the past. But you know what? I'm going to defend him in this case. You know what I hate more than his joke? This. Listen to the explanation. I'm going to read it to you. Listen to the explanation of why this guy, Jimmy Kimmel, was taken off the air. I'm going to read it to you. Here it is. We do not believe his comments reflect the spectrum of opinions, views, or values of our local communities. It is simply not in the public interest at the current time. The quote then goes on to say that we should move toward the resumption of respectful, constructive dialogue. What does that sound like to you? I mean, I'm reporting from Russia. This is Russia, right? I feel like I'm hearing those words out of a Dr. Zhivago novel. Remember the commissar, right? Strelnikov, the Bolshevik dude who would go around rounding up anybody who looked or sounded like a counter-revolutionary? I mean, these words I just read about Jimmy Kimmel, who, again, I'm no fan of, it sounds like a KGB agent would, you know, show up at somebody's door during the worst of the Soviet era.
The government does not like the tone of what you said today in the grocery store.
I mean, what the hell is this? They don't do that here. They don't do that here in Russia anymore. But they're doing it in America? To a comedian? I mean, what does that say? Anyway. After the break, we're going to be joined by an American like me, Bruce Marks. He's a former Pennsylvania senator, and he's going to be good enough to join us here, and we're going to get his take on a lot of things, including U.S. and Russia relations these days. Stay where you are. We'll be right back. So we are back. It's so great to be here with you all, and I want to introduce you to one of my newest friends here in Moscow. He's an American, just like I am, but I'm from Florida, and he's from Pennsylvania. And he is Bruce Marks. He's an attorney. He's a former congressman. He's done a lot of things in his life. Happens to be a friend of the presidents of the United States, Mr. Trump. And he's good enough to join us here. You know, what's interesting about Mr. Marks is that he spends half his time in the United States and the other half in Moscow, where he has two businesses, which he has run for many, many years now, going back, I guess, what, decades, right?
1998.
Wow. What originally brought you here?
I was very interested in, when I was in college at the University of Pennsylvania, same school as our President Trump, in studying a different political and economic system. And if you drink, you're not going to study the Arabic system. Chinese was impossible. And I majored in Russian language and literature. Now, if I went to the library and I was reading Dostoevsky, girls were interested in me. So it was the perfect combination. And then I moved here to Moscow in 1980 to study. Mm. And then I was going to work for the television network covering the Olympics, except the United States pulled out of the Olympics. And so at that point, I went back to the United States and didn't return until 1997.
Yeah, and, you know, it's almost seemed in many ways, Bruce, like the relationship between Russia and our country, Russia and the United States, has been everything from bad to good to promising to muddy. And you've kind of been in the middle of all of that. Why has it been all over the place like that all the time? Is it our politicians? What is it?
It's certainly not the people. Because even when I was here during the Soviet times, I was just received very, very friendly. Yeah. People wanted to meet Americans. And, you know, wearing blue jeans, they knew I was an American. And I made an effort. I tell the truth, I really didn't go to the school that often.
Right.
But I went out and I met Russians on the street. I went to the synagogue so I could meet, you know, Jewish people. There were European students from, you know, Eastern European who lived in our dormitory. The Polish girls all went to church on Sunday. So if you were interested in a Polish girl, you would go to church on Sunday. And when I came back in 1997, I was, you know, again, it was a very welcoming thing. So it's not the people. I think, unfortunately, in a lot of ways, it's the politicians.
How could it be the people? I mean, I wish... For those of you watching us at home, the millions of people all over the world, including those of you watching us in the United States, I know you're watching because I've seen the reports. If you came here, I swear, if you came here and you walked around this place and talked to those people behind me, families, guys, women, children, they're kind of like what we hope we can be again. Am I saying that right? I think so. We hear a lot in the United States about a time when we needed, you know, a time in America where we need to kind of get rid of where we are now with the, you know, we've got serious homeless problems, drug problems. We've got a lot of problems. And some of those things, you don't see them here. And I'm wondering, these people would be a wonderful friend to have for our country. What a shame.
One of the things that's most really bothers me, and listen, there are things that the Russians do that I don't agree with.
Of course.
There are things that the Americans and the Western people. When I was here during the Soviet times, the Soviet people couldn't leave the country. It was unfortunate.
Yeah.
And then that changed. How in the world, after when they were then able to leave the country and they could see what aspects of life were like in the West? Because look at, mm-hmm. I lived here during the communist times.
Yeah,
you're
rough.
Here. Just look, it's so beautiful here. The stores, the restaurants, what the city is like now. The most absurd thing to me in the world is the sanction that we have that are preventing Russians from getting visas to go to Western
and
Europe.
And Americans to come here and see this.
Well, no, no, no.
Yeah.
The Russians don't, no, that absolutely, that's an open door. I had no problem, and as far as I know, no Americans have problems getting visas to come to Russia.
Huh.
Okay, it's the The problem is that if you're an American, right,
right,
you can't take a direct flight to Russia. You can't take a flight from Western Europe because the Western European countries have precluded that. And your credit cards don't work here,
right,
because of the financial sanctions.
Yeah.
I have a law firm here, and my law, it's a Russian entity. It has its own, you know, bank accounts and credit cards. So I can use that credit card, you know, when I go around here. But that, to me, is one of the most counterproductive things that have occurred, is the restrictions on Russians being able to go to Western Europe and to go to the United States. You know, if you want a visa to the United States, if you're in Russia, you know where you have to go to get it? You have to go to Poland. Okay? You can't get it here in Russia. And not only that, Poland has a restriction that if you want to come into Poland, if you're Russian, you have to take a bus.
But my argument is, Bruce, we're self-isolating. The West is isolating itself from the rest of the world with some of these notions and these laws that they create. Because in America, you're not allowed to watch Russian programming. You don't know, Mr. Putin might say a speech. You may hate Mr. Putin. That's fine. You can hate him, but you should know what he said. You should listen to his speech. You should be able to watch television news, if you happen to want to, that tells you what's happening in Russia or China or India or any of these places. But we're blocking all that.
Well, you know, I can't tell you how true it is because you know how true it is. Now, I would watch RT time to time when I was in the United States. But what I did watch all the time was Russian language television, like Первый канал. I'd be working out at home. Первый канал and one of the other Russian stations was on my cable TV, right? So I could work out and I could improve my Russian at the same time. After February 2022, all of that was blocked. And there's an American, I can't remember his, Dimitri Symes, okay? And he was on, you know, like they have, you know, the Sunday programs. He was an American, Dimitri Symes. He would be on it. And it would be interesting to me because I would be able to get the Russian perspective, right?
Of course.
And of course, RT has, you know, a question more. So you get a very different perspective from RT than you get from the mainstream media, plus Fox, the United States. And that, it's for the West to we have a lot of.
It was Biden.
We have a lot of freedoms in the West. But to cut off communication so we couldn't hear the Russian perspective, right? And it was Biden. And you know, I have my own take on that, but because I had done work in Ukraine, and it was just common knowledge that the money that his son got, there's a Russian word called Krisha. It means like it's your roof. That it was done to protect the guy because he was paying off the son because of the father.
Well, if he was awake, I mean, right? I mean, seriously, I mean, listen, I mean, I feel bad saying that, but the man was mentally, you know, not capable at the time of making most of the decisions. And you got a lot of these guys who were running the State Department who were just complete Russophobes and were probably making a couple of bucks off of the money, the war in Ukraine. So they make these decisions. Tell me how hating Russia and backing Ukraine in the war of Ukraine, in Ukraine, helps your friend or my friend who happens to live in Kansas City or in Hialeah, Florida, or in Philly. Tell me how that guy benefits from that. Because I don't know.
Well, listen, I have to tell you this. The people in the United States make their own decisions. It's a free country. If you travel around the United States like I do, I see people, I go to small towns. There is support for Ukraine in the United States. Whether you are going to say, well, that's because of the way it's reported in the media.
Which is what I would say, yes.
Whether you're going to say because...
I don't think they could find it on a map.
They find flags, which is interesting to me because you do see Ukrainian flags in small towns in the United States, places where Ukrainians don't live. But what would help America, okay, is not spending money on a war in Ukraine. And what would help America would be having President Trump, and I really believe that he's sincere in his interest in resolving the dispute between Russia and Ukraine.
Yeah.
That would help Russia. That would help Ukraine. And it's something, you know, that I've said for years, whether I was in American media or whether I was on Russian media, Donald Trump sincerely would like to find a way to resolve that.
I think you're right. I think he's sucked at it. I think he's doing horrible. I mean, I'm sorry. You make a promise, you should try and fulfill it. unfortunately, and maybe you're right not to blame him and say, well, the pressure that these SOBs are putting on him, these interventionalists, these neocons, these war profiteers, et cetera, and these politicians who've been taking money from all of those people, maybe that's just an unbelievable, overburdening pressure that he cannot overcome. That's the only thing I can think of.
How about you?
What I think is that he hasn't been in his second term all that long. It's been about 7 months. He did something that Biden never did, is that he met face-to-face with President Putin.
Props for that.
And sometimes these things take time. Sometimes people have to talk to each other. Things aren't always solved, unfortunately, at a first meeting. Yeah. And he's in a president, you know, they criticized him for speaking to President Putin. That was like somehow, well, you're giving President Putin stature.
It's crazy.
President Putin is the president of Russia. It is a nuclear power.
Yeah. Okay? He's not a maintenance guy.
Right. Talking to him for 3 hours. You know, it's not like he's gone up from the basement.
You're so right. I saw that. We reported it here. I said there were like all these media figures going on the air and they were aghast. Look at him. He's talking to the president of Russia. What's he doing? He's like, he's supposed to talk. That's what presidents are supposed to do, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's crazy. Well, you know, you're a litigator, and I'm glad you went there, because I want to ask you. You've spent your life trying to solve problems. That's what you do for a living, solve problems for people using legal recourses. Do you think at some point Mr. Trump just has to tell one side? My opinion is Mr. Zelensky has no reason for this war to stop, because if the war stops, he's going to be out of a job. So my thinking is he's incentivized not to end the war. And if you're a litigator and you got one side that you know really doesn't want to come to a conclusion, what do you do?
You know, I can't discuss the details of it, but I represent three Russian companies, Tsargrad, Pravoslav, which is the Russian Orthodox Church, and TV Novosti. And we have a big dispute with Google.
Right.
And we're very close to resolving one aspect of it. Who would have ever thought that you could reach, I hope, and again, I can't discuss details, but you might be able to solve something between Google and those three clients. And the one way we did that is because we had a terrific magistrate judge who was the mediator. Now, I don't know, you know, art of the deal, right? That's the president. I don't know how you work it out. Obviously, you know, Zelensky and President Putin, you know, that's not a good situation.
Right.
But maybe that there's some way, whether it's Donald Trump or it's Vice President Vance or it's Steve Witkoff, mm-hmm. some way, if you have people that President Putin respect, and B, Zelensky, you know, they have a stick over Zelensky, mm-hmm. right? I mean, President Trump was pretty candid with him on the, you know, in the meeting in the Oval Office.
Yeah, he was.
You know,
I like what he said to him. Sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you, but I like what he said to him. Says, so tell me again why you haven't had an election. And Zelensky says, well, because martial law, we're at war. And Trump looks at him and says, so you mean if we are at war somewhere, I can cancel my next election? It's like, zing. Anyway, continue.
That was an astute comment that Trump made. Some of us were a little worried about it, but not really. But he said to him, "You have no cards."
Yeah.
If you remember that.
Yes.
And so I still, I have a lot of faith in President Trump, and I still think that. Because of the respect that he demonstrates to President Putin and the candidness
he does.
That he demonstrates to Zelensky, that he can, I'm very hopeful that he can broker a deal.
But
I'm not betting on it.
No, and it goes back to what I said, and I'm not sure there's a solution, but one side, I think, Mr. Putin does not need this war. He doesn't need this war. He'd like, my sense is, I don't know Mr. Putin. I haven't spoken to Mr. Putin about this. But my sense is, from covering this now for many, many years, that the Russians would like nothing more than to get the hell out of this war. They're done with it. The people are, and so are the leaders. But they also don't want to walk away from it and let it go back to what it was, which is NATO's on your door with missiles pointed at Moscow. So they're saying, assure us that's not going to happen and we'll walk away. But nobody's willing to say that, and the Europeans don't seem willing to say that either. So, meanwhile, I feel bad for the Ukrainians. because they're just going to continue to kind of get ramrodded. My fear.
It's the old story, you know, that the West are willing to fight to the last Ukrainian. I think we've heard that a number of times. And there are problems. You don't see this in the West. I have a colleague. He's a lawyer. He's represented essentially a part of the Ukrainian Orthodox Church that's very friendly with the Russian Orthodox Church. Mm-hmm. And they have been repressed.
Yes, they have.
In Ukraine. Okay, they have taken control of churches, they have taken control of some of the wealth, and that's a story, unfortunately, that has not gotten out. So there's a lot that's happening with President Zelensky that's not being seen in terms of the corruption that's being tolerated with the funds that either come from Western Europe or the United States.
I had a reporter here on with me yesterday, essentially sitting in your chair. He's a reporter with One America News, and he was sharing with me what he had just seen because he had just gone to the Donbass, and he said, Rick, I've seen families and children who have died, and they've been bombed and shelled, and when we think of the Ukrainian war, we always think of the Russians as the aggressors, which they are to a certain extent. Russia's, you know, involved in the war. We don't think that in those areas where those four oblasts are, Donetsk is where he was particularly, he said, you know, the Ukrainians have been shelling those people as well. And he said, one man came to me, Bruce, he said, one man came to me and said, please tell your country to stop bombing my family. I was like, wow, you know, kind of hits home, right? You realize that you're an American, I'm an American. That's our warfare. Those are our missiles. Those are our bombs that are being sent into that country. I wish it would stop. I just don't think it's good for, like I said, the average American that we do that.
Well, it's not good for the average American or the average Ukrainian, and it's not good for the Russians who are dying in the battle. There's a lot of, you know, Russian soldiers who have been killed as well.
Yeah.
That's, I'm a litigator, and I can solve some disputes, but that's... I'm not litigating that one.
Hey, let's talk about business. I'm fascinated. So sometimes I wake up in the morning and, you know, I go for walks, I go for jogs, I go into the malls here. You know what I feel? It's weird, Bruce. When I go in the malls around here, I hear American music. I hear music in English. I hear bands. I see signs in English. If people were speaking Russian, I would think I was in Pembroke Pines, Florida, or South Philly, or whatever the heck, you know? You can't even tell. You think you're... There's a lot of American culture here. It's, the reason I'm saying this to you as a business person is it seems to me there's a business opportunity here for anybody who would want to take it in terms of 160 million people or whatever it is who love to buy American goods and products.
Well, there certainly was. Listen, I lived here again in 1980 during the Soviet times when there was nothing in the stores. If you wanted to drink Pepsi, and Coke wasn't here, Pepsi was, you had to go to the theater because they made a deal where Stolichnaya vodka came to the United States and Pepsi came here. Fast forward to, I don't know, 1998 when I first came back, the most shocking thing to me was that they had everything in stores then. Yeah. Everything. And that was just the beginning. That was only, you know, really 6 years after the Soviet Union dissolved. And after that, I had a friend and when I started to work here in 98, 99, he made me go to the McDonald's, you know, which is in Pushkin Square. And the reason was, he said, you know what? Our McDonald's is better than anything you have in the United States.
Yeah, he said that in Moscow.
How does he know?
He probably never had a Big Mac in his life.
Well, he had lived in Philadelphia.
I thought he was a Muscovite.
But he was from St. Petersburg. But... Russians have embraced a lot of aspects of American culture. There's a lot of aspects that they haven't embraced, which is a good thing. And one of the things that was, you know, big in the Trump campaign, you know, with the Democrats supporting, you know, men playing women's sports, that type of thing just doesn't exist here because of the traditional values that the vast majority of the Russian people have.
Very family-oriented.
And not having, you know, the left-wing media glorifying, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. A lot of companies, including my clients, Coca-Cola, Baskin-Robbins, others, Marriott has left. Hilton is still here.
I hear they want to come back. I don't mean Hilton in particular, but I'm...
Hilton's still here, but I think the others do.
My sources have told me, and especially in the energy sector, that they're knocking at the door again and preparing for the Trump administration to allow them to get back in because they want to do business here, especially in something like, Russia. I don't know if our viewers know this, but they have probably more natural resources than just about any country in the world. Why wouldn't we want to be a part of that in some way?
Well, again, you're going to have to do this step by step. I think it's going to take, we advise businesses. Businesses, have, perceptions as to where they want to do business. They have perceptions on risk. They have perceptions on the legal system here, which most people would agree have the same transparency as in the United States. That's why, for example, in business contracts, arbitration is much more popular here, so that if you have an international contract, you're not resolving the dispute either in the courts of England or in the courts of Russia, but in a more neutral forum.
Let me ask you this. It seems to me, my reading of Mr. Trump and my coverage of him journalistically and my sources who know him and have talked to him, that deep down, he would love to see, from a business standpoint, as a businessman, take off his president hat, he would love to see a flourishing business relationship between Russia and the United States. He himself wanted to once put one of his hotels here. That's public information. Nothing wrong with that.
Well, it's not just public information. I was here, I think it was about 2009, and Donnie Jr. was here, and I met him at a real estate conference.
And that's what he was here for?
Well, he was actively looking at the market, let's just put it that way, whether it was going to build the Trump Tower, whatever it is. Donald Trump is a businessman. He does deals. I'm sure that he would like to see Americans do more business here and more business, in a lot of countries.
Do you think he can make that happen? Do you think it's a question of just when, or do you think it's a stonewall?
Well,
right
I don't
now?
Think that he's going to. I think he's first got to resolve, the war. I don't think he's going to have business interest be the primary, mover as to what he's going to try to do. But I think that as part of that effort, I do think he's going to try to do sort of a carrot and stick type thing, because I think the Russians want to do business with the United States.
I don't think this war can go another 6 or 7 months. I think this thing's going to be over probably by, at the very least, April or summer of next year. This thing, unfortunately, if it goes that long, just from what my military analyst sources tell me, if it goes that long, it's very bad news for Ukraine. Hopefully it'll end before then.
Well, listen, I always made the analogy in 2022, things actually didn't go so well for Russia.
Correct.
And then it changed.
Yeah.
Well, in 1941, things didn't go so well for Russia. They went a little bit better than Germany. But the Russian people can fight. And maybe at the beginning, when they're not well organized and some of the military leaders aren't disciplined, they have setbacks. The Russians are powerful fighters, and I agree with you that from a military perspective right now, I'll just quote President Trump, Zelensky doesn't have a lot of cards.
Yeah. Well, that's what McGregor says, and that's what Ritter says, and that's what Davis says, and that's what Mearsheimer says, and that's what...
Mearsheimer is a professor at the University of Chicago.
Correct.
And he's somebody who warned about this, right, in 2022.
Yes.
And he said, you just got to listen to President Putin. And if you look at it historically, right, I mean... I don't recall all the details. I'm not a historian.
Yeah.
But assurances were given to Russia, right? Yeah. That NATO wasn't going to creep up to the border. And then when you see the expansion of NATO and it goes into the Baltic countries and it goes into other countries, this is a country, you know, that was that was invaded, you know, and it has been invaded more than once. Something that perhaps the Americans, you know, don't have that perspective, because we tend to be the country that goes into another country. Mm-hmm. So having, again, I don't agree with everything that the Russian government does. However, if you spend time here and you speak to people that you know, you then get to understand that perspective, that they're concerned about that type of aggressiveness.
Wouldn't we be if China had taken over Montreal or changed the government in Montreal and had missiles in Canada?
Well, Canada's not the 51st state yet, so we're
No.
I know.
Ukraine is a neighbor of China, of Russia. Where the hell are we talking about? And Canada's a neighbor of the United States.
Listen, it's not theoretical. Look what happened when the Soviet Union put missiles in, I don't know, where are you from again?
Cuba, last time I checked.
Right, and what happened? How the United States reacted to that.
You're right. Yeah, you're right. Here's what I've been thinking about lately, though, and you're a good guy to answer this. It seems like during the Biden administration, anybody who was associated with Russia in any way, I mean, you play in a Russian band, they were going to find a way to punish you in the United States. They were arresting people, putting people in jail. Even though those laws are still probably on the books, during the Trump administration, we haven't seen so much of that anymore. That's a good thing.
Well, let me say,
right?
It's a terrific thing. Let me answer that in two ways. The whole Russia thing was a hoax, okay? Just an absolute hoax. And I think you must have people who are following me, because yesterday I met with Maria Butina.
Oh, really?
The Duma member.
Yeah.
And I had been on her show before, but we had never met in person.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of personal aspects of how she suffered when she was put into the prison of the United States and so forth. But she's a perfect example of that. She was a young, enthusiastic, still is young, a student. She went to American University. She was vibrant. She took advantage of all the opportunities to interact with people. She happens to be a gun rights advocate.
Yeah.
She was involved with a member, I guess, of the NRA. And then when she was arrested for basically being Russian, she was kicked out of the NRA with no reason. And she's just a terrific person to talk to, because she is somebody who was truly victimized by what happened. She wasn't a government official. She wasn't, you know, involved in espionage. And you're absolutely right about the impact on individuals.
It's horrible. It's horrible to just, you know, tarnish somebody simply because they're associated with a country that you don't like, which is essentially what the Biden administration was doing at the time. I think I haven't seen, correct me if I'm wrong, I haven't seen any signs yet that even though many of those antiquated laws put there by the Biden administration are still there, that and I'm saying this from a personal standpoint. I don't know if I go back and visit my family, if, you know, my government's going to put me in jail. Oh, my God, you were on Russian TV, you know. It's like, yeah, I was doing a news show. I mean, do you see anybody writing my scripts here or anything? Did I have prepared questions for you?
No, you
sent me by the criminal.
No.
We're just shooting. You're right. So, you know, I worry.
You didn't have prepared questions for me. I'm doing this cold, okay?
And you're good at it. You better be. You're a lawyer. Right. My I'm thinking, thank God, the Trump administration is not taking personal reprisals against people the way we've seen in the past. I'm hoping that's the way it's going to stay. I don't have any sense that it's not. Do you?
Listen, let me give you another example of
okay.
that. There was a recent search of John Bolton's home and his office. And he was the one who wrote the book, which he shouldn't have written, to give private information about being the national security advisor. That just is the wrong thing, in my opinion, to have done if Trump was still going to be president. Once somebody's out of office, and if they're not going to be in the office in the future, then fine. And so the media immediately said, there he is, President Trump retaliating.
Yeah,
right?
He did to him.
But listen, then the media learned 3 days later that the investigation was begun during the Biden administration. And that's why you haven't heard anything about it anymore.
Not a story, huh?
No, not a story, because he's not retaliating. What he's doing, in my opinion, in the Justice Department, they're now enforcing the law equally.
Yeah.
So people on both sides, depending on what they do, Trump is enforcing laws. He's enforcing the immigration laws. Yeah. He's not retaliating against anybody. These are people who had entered our country, and we used to see it on television. Remember on Fox, you would have these marches from South America across the border, and that's all ended. What I say is, the biggest surprise to some people about Donald Trump is he actually did what he said he was going to do when he was running for president. And that's why so many of us appreciate him, that he's ending the wokeness in America. He's solving immigration issues. Mm-hmm. And let me ask you this. When you go out here at night, you feel safe?
Completely. In Moscow?
Yeah. I didn't mean to be asking about Miami.
Not in Philly. Where you're from, or Miami, where I'm. Well, but here's the thing about our country, though, Bruce. Where I live, and I'm sure where you live, I don't even think about crime. Never happened. It's not going to happen where I live, because I live in the suburbs, and I've got a gate, and I've got a 5-acre home. So, you know, yeah, us guys who lived in the suburb, who live in the burbs, got it pretty good. But in the inner cities, this is an inner city. That's the difference, I think.
Well, let me say this about that. There's parts of Philadelphia which are very, very safe. There's parts of Philadelphia, and you would see it on television, the Kensington and Allegheny area, where they had the tremendous problem with the fentanyl. Mm-hmm. That the mayor of Philadelphia.
Oh, the zombies.
The zombies.
Yeah.
When I was a state senator in Pennsylvania, that was in my district. Mm. I would take people from other parts of Pennsylvania. They couldn't believe that existed. But let me say this: we have crime in the suburbs too. We had the Black Lives Matter riots, mm-hmm. right in 2020. Okay, I live half a mile outside the city of Philadelphia. Okay, mm-hmm. the shopping center just on my side of the border was looted. And why were people looting? People were looting because they weren't arresting them.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And now you have Donald Trump trying to end crime in the cities. You know, with the National Guard is being used in Washington, D.C., which mm-hmm. has historically been a problematic city. You know, the only place I've ever been mugged in the United States was D.C. So
you were mugged? Really?
I was mugged twice.
What was that like?
I was shocked. I just wish it was in. I was
with a gun?
No. The one time the guy I was with a woman, and we were arm in arm, and a guy ran from behind us and he grabbed her purse.
Wow.
And she then started to chase him. And I'm like, hey, honey, that's not really a good
idea. I'll get you a purse.
but be that as it may.
Damn. I mean,
but when I'm in Moscow, people will ask me, you know, when you're here in Moscow, do you feel safe?
Incredibly safe.
I
see people putting their purses on tables and walking to the bathroom. It's like stuff you would never do in the United States.
But it is just not Moscow. I've been all through Russia. You're gonna have your opportunities. I know you've been to St. Petersburg, which is just wonderful in the summer. But hopefully you'll have a chance to see Nizhny Novgorod. I've been to Novosibirsk a couple times. Novosibirsk is very beautiful. Ekaterinburg is very beautiful. You'll get to go to, if you ski at all, because of the Olympics, they build up Sochi.
I played at Jack Nicklaus Golf Course here on weekends. I think it's one of the most beautiful golf courses in the world. Saliva. It's unbelievable. I mean, it's like it's a fountain course. I feel like I'm in Pennsylvania playing golf or something. So.
Well, we got a pretty good club there, Marriott.
Yeah, I heard. But it is pretty special. I wish more people like you and me could experience this. Not to bash our place, because I love America and I love everything about my country, but I wish we could not self-isolate so much and see the rest of the world. Maybe not just Russia. We just happen to be talking to Russia about Russia right now, and it's a magnificent place.
I wish America would be more outward thinking. I think we put all our eggs around the European countries, and those countries are becoming more and more puny, it seems to me, every day. You know, the Frances and the UKs and the Germanys, there's not much there anymore.
Well, because I represent Russian companies, so I'm going to some places I didn't go before. I was in Dubai, I go to Dubai quite a bit, but I was in Hong Kong and then China in April of this year. And maybe it's because China steals all of our intellectual property, I don't know, but China is amazing.
Yes, it is.
Just.
I think they're better capitalists than we are.
The economic development, I can remember the old China. I was in Beijing just 2 weeks after Tiananmen Square. It's totally different country. I was in Beijing, I was in Shanghai, just enormously. You know, if we could get to a place where Russia and the United States were cooperating, then Russia would continue to expand. It just wouldn't be, you know, a country that's based, that has oil, would have, and of course it has technology, but a lot more.
Do you agree with Professor Jeffrey Sachs, for example, who says we literally are pushing Russia right into China's arms?
Well, we don't want to do that, but the impact, the natural impact of some of our sanctions is to do exactly that. And that's why some of these financial sanctions, and particularly cutting off individuals, people.
Yeah.
It's one thing, listen, if you impose sanctions on, I don't know, Gazprom, I don't want to get in trouble, maybe they'll be my clients someday.
Yeah.
But for your average Russians, for them not to be able to have credit cards and bank accounts.
It's crazy.
It's crazy. And it builds more, what's the word, resentment. It builds more resentment than does any good, because people figure out a way to get around it.
When was the last time you talked to President Trump
don't make me look like I'm his best friend. Wish I were.
But do you talk to people in his administration, for example?
Yes, of course. Yeah.
Do you tell him that? I mean, that's the reason. The genesis of my question is, do you think people in our government understand the things that you've come to understand and come to know?
I think that some people do.
Like J.D. does.
You know, I really like him because we come from a similar background. I grew up in West Virginia.
Oh, really?
Which is Appalachia.
Yeah.
He grew up in Appalachia, but in southern Ohio, which is a lot like West Virginia. And education, you know, moved him out. He ended up, you know, he went to Yale Law School. I went to the University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia. But I understand it. I just went back to West Virginia because it was a 50th high school reunion. My high school was in Pittsburgh, but I wanted to go back to where I grew up. And so I'm not a elitist, you know, from New York. You probably, since your folks emigrated from Cuba, you probably lived in a working class family.
My mom, my parents together made $11,000 a year combined income. And that's with my dad working two jobs when I was a kid. We were below poverty level. So I know what it's like. I mean, I think you're better when you come from that, though.
But I do talk to I do talk to people. Certainly during the campaign, of course, in 2020, because I was active in the campaign, and then in 2024.
I think there's people in the Trump administration who get what you and I are talking about. I know they haven't acted on it yet, and God bless you for saying, you know, sometimes things just take time, and things have to come together. And the Ukraine war is an obstacle, and hopefully, when that gets settled, it would be nice to see America dealing again with countries outside of just the same old UK, Denmark, France, Germany, because, I mean, those countries have GDP growth that's in the negative. So I wouldn't want to be best friends with, that's like making a basketball team and only picking 4'2" squatty guys,
Well, maybe I could play pro ball then, I don't know. I didn't play college ball like you did.
You were going to go there. Bruce, you are a delight. Thanks so much.
Thank you for having me here.
I could talk to you all day.
And I'm going to tell your audience, this is really the Kremlin behind us. It's not, you know,
right.
It's not a backdrop. It's just amazing. We're just within a couple football fields.
Every once in a while I turn, watch, and I go like, see the people waving back there?
They are.
They are.
Those are real people. That's not AI or anything that's going on back there. We're out of time. What a pleasure it has been to have this conversation with my friend Bruce Marks. I guess my attorney now, too. I think, I don't know, not that I have any issues that need to be represented, but thanks so much for watching us. My podcast is called Journalistically Speaking. Every day it gets bigger and bigger. My conversations now that I have with you after this show on YouTube, I'm at Rick Sanchez TV. It's crazy. We're getting hundreds of thousands of people that we're conversing with and having conversations, and I'm sure a lot of you are going to be commenting on the conversation that I just had with Bruce. So bring it on. I'm looking forward to sharing ideas with you, and thanks for being with us. And you know what? Thanks for letting us into your homes. God bless. Take care. See you next time.